Our first argued case is Bell Semiconductor v. NXP et al., 2023-1260. Mr. Silver.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Blair Silver on behalf of Appellant Bell Semiconductor. In this case, the Board's obviousness decision cannot stand because the Board failed to follow clear Supreme Court precedent that requires defining a clear starting point when evaluating the prior art reference Chin for single reference obviousness. Evaluate that reference as a whole, identify the differences, and then find a motivation to depart from Chin. In addition, the Board also erred in its analysis of the parasitic capacitance reduction limitation that requires a reduction between two specifically described claim layers in the 340 patent by resting on an incomplete and, more importantly, an unargued inherency finding that NXP has now expressly disavowed in its briefing. Now, I'll focus my remarks today on Claim 1. If the Court has any questions about Claims 16 and 17 that are also in our brief, please feel free to ask. Now, on the first issue, the Board did not grapple with Chin, the main and only reference against Claim 1, as a whole. Now, there's no dispute on the law in this case. References must be read as a whole, even the parts that teach away. References require a starting point to comply with Graham, where you identify claim differences, and then you need a motivation to meet those claim differences. And as Westlaw teaches, you cannot pick and choose out-of-context parts from the specification. But that's exactly what the Board did here. NXP's changing starting point embodies this problem. When the Board was deciding this case before, it was Chin alone. That was abundantly clear in the briefing. By the time we get on appeal, and this is probably emblematic of Chin's lack of teaching of integrated circuit package substrates, it's now an integrated circuit package substrate that's a typical integrated circuit package substrate being modified by Chin. Moreover, the Board in this case had trouble even determining whether there was this parasitic capacitance reduction in Chin because it could not find a starting point for which to evaluate that. But here, Chin as a whole describes a printed circuit board with surface traces and pads, underlying reference planes with cutouts and compensation capacitors that fix a known impedance mismatch in Chin. Starting with that point, the Board needed to identify the differences and find a motivation. And those differences on appeal are the integrated circuit package substrate and the parasitic capacitance reduction between the claim layers that we'll talk about in a minute.
Mr. Silver, of course, what a reference teaches is question of fact. And so you've got a substantial evidence burden to overcome here.
Well, Your Honor, traditionally, yes, that is the standard review for what a reference does teach. In this circumstance, though, the Board's analysis disembodied of the reference was flawed because they failed to actually identify the starting point to compare the reference to the claims. So, yes, while the actual reference teachings is a question of fact, the legal question of what is the framework for obviousness and how you comply with Graham is a legal question that the court can look at de novo. Now, here, you need look no farther to NXP's response brief to see how weak the disclosure on integrated circuit package substrate is, where they seem to admit tacitly that Chin doesn't describe it because they modified their ground to now be a typical IC package substrate that is then modified by Chin. They wouldn't need to do so if Chin had a clear disclosure of integrated circuit package substrate.
So you argue that there's a mismatch between Chin and the asserted claim.
There's an impedance mismatch in Chin in terms of what it's the problem it's solving.
There's a mismatch.
But there's also the claims don't line up because Chin doesn't disclose an integrated circuit package.
But isn't that the case in all situations where you're looking at obviousness?
Absolutely.
I mean, if they did match up, then we'd have anticipation.
And we do not have anticipation in this case. And this is a limitation where they were arguing obviousness. And so here we know that something is missing, and the Board needed to bridge that gap to find the integrated circuit package substrate. And here, the only thing the Board latched onto, and that NXP mentions briefly on appeal, are individual words of the word substrate and semiconductor implementations plucked out of context from the brief. And as we explained in our briefing, each of those circumstances was indisputably talking about the printed circuit board side of a ball grid array. You're talking about the larger motherboard-looking device, not the small integrated circuit on top. And there's been no dispute about that in their briefing, that those mentions of semiconductors, those mentions of substrates, were all talking about the PCB side of a ball grid array. Now, the Board dismissed the impedance matching goal of Chin as not germane to its inquiry. The board misread that case law. That case law is talking about whether the prior art, for an obviousness, you need to have the exact same motivation. Here, we're talking about modifying Chin away from its core purpose of impedance matching. And there's no dispute that is the core purpose of Chin, is to match impedance between a surface microstrip and a pad. Now, the board and NXP have not given any reason why you would ignore that goal, in fact, contrary to that goal, in the proposed modification to Chin. And there's no dispute in this case that if you were to add cutouts, underlying cutouts, in a system that doesn't have an impedance problem, you would actually cause an impedance problem. And there's no dispute in this case that Chin criticizes using cutouts in reference planes alone. And the law is clear, and again, undisputed, that you cannot change the basic principles of operation of a reference in obviousness, and you cannot modify away from a key feature without a concrete reason why, a motivation. And here, the board identified none. Now, I'd like to turn, unless the court has any questions about that first module, to the inherency argument with regard to the 340 patent. This argument is independent of the single reference obviousness argument I just mentioned. The 340 patent requires that the cutouts reduce parasitic capacitance between two specifically claimed layers. There is no dispute in this case that Chin does not say that. Chin talks about reducing parasitic capacitance at the pad. You can see this in figure 2A of Chin. Element 220 is the pad. It's a square. It's a component in the middle of the surface. Layer 200 is the broader area in Chin. That includes the traces and the compensation capacitors and other elements that would be present on there. NXP has conceded abundantly clear in its briefing that it did not argue inherency in the disclosure. NXP has conceded the board didn't find inherency. That's because NXP never raised inherency. So at this point, the board cannot make an inherency finding. Indeed, the board's only support for the physics involved between the two claimed layers was from one paragraph in their expert's background statement. And it's abundantly clear in the law that an expert's single paragraph in a background statement is not preserving an argument for appeal. It certainly was never applied to Chin in this case by any party. And therefore, what you have is a reference that does not teach something, no inherency, and no obviousness argument to go along with it. And so there's no basis, there's no substantial evidence to affirm the board's decision with regard to the inherent disclosure. And moreover, the only evidence of record is actually that the capacitance between the layers is not known, and in fact could be greater than before you do Chin's method. And that's undisputed on appeal. Your Honor, I'd like to briefly touch on Claim 16 and 17, because I think I have a minute. On Claim 16 and 17, Claim 2 requires a second electrically conductive layer that is a routing layer. The board found that this claim was not shown to be unpatentable, and it did so because NXP had failed to provide a motivation to change Chin's undisputed second layer from a reference plane to a signal plane. Now, in their briefing before the board, NXP, for Claim 16, pointed back to Claim 2 without analysis to say, see Claim 2. Once they tied those claims together, the board could not come to an inconsistent result because there's no separate argument to evaluate for that inconsistent result. In effect, Claim 2 became representative of Claim 16. Moreover, there was no dispute that Chin doesn't disclose this second reference plane, so a second layer as a signal plane instead of a reference plane. Claim 16 requires the adjacent electrically conductive planes mentioned in Claim 12 to be signal planes. They require them under the serial data stream limitation in Claim 16. Because they're tied together and because there's no argument of that, Claim 16 is even farther away than Claim 2 was. And because there was no motivation in the record to convert the second layer to a signal layer, there's no basis for the board to have found that those claims were unpatentable. Now, if the court has any further questions on any of those issues, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
We will hold it for you. Mr. Fenton.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My friend indeed raised a number of arguments that were addressing factual determinations by the Board, which are reviewed for substantial evidence. These arguments should be denied because the Board did make factual determinations with citations to the evidence and then explained their rationale. Bell is effectively asking this Court to reweigh the evidence, which it does not do on appeal. So let's take a look at the, I want to address the points that were raised here particularly. Let's look at the integrated circuit, integrated circuit packet substrate. Okay, Bell argues that Chin only discloses a printed circuit board or PCB implementation or embodiment. And in fact, Chin does describe an embodiment as a printed circuit board, uses those words very carefully. However, the Board disagreed that this is the only teaching of Chin. The Board found that Chin actually expressly discloses an IC packet substrate. Appendix 20, citing to Chin 161-62, specifically Chin describes a substrate using a substrate used inside a BGA package. A BGA package is exactly the same type of IC package substrate that the 340 patent and the 269 patent are talking about. The Board went further and found that Chin expressly...
Chin discloses the use of cutouts.
Chin discloses the use of cutouts, and it discloses an IC package substrate.
Does it matter what size those cutouts are?
Does it matter what size they are?
Right.
It does matter.
Does Chin require them to be a certain size?
Chin does not require them to be any particular size. The Board expressly found that Chin, in its disclosure, suggests and teaches the use of its cutouts and its design in an IC package substrate. The Board quotes, the present invention relates generally to the design and fabrication of printed circuits and multi-layered substrates. Now, those are different. The multi-layered substrate is a broader class of things than a printed circuit board. And we'll see in another example later that Chin was very careful with his language. And again, Chin also describes another example. It's talking about examples or applications of its technology in the background section. And it says, another example is a substrate used inside a BGA package. That's at Chin 56-65, cited by the Board at Appendix 22. So there's substantial evidence, right? If there's a chance that there are two different interpretations of Chin, that satisfies substantial evidence if they picked one and explained why. Okay. Bell also argues that the Board ignored the other features of Chin and its goal. The teachings of Chin are not limited to the structure of its preferred embodiment. Netflix and Lear make that very clear. Further, the Board actually addressed those additional features. So the features that my friend brought up were microstrips and tuning capacitors. Okay, first, the Board found that Chin does not require microstrips. This finding is based on substantial evidence, including Chin. Specifically, Chin talks about microstrips as one embodiment, but it also talks about interconnecting traces. Again, a broader term. Chin's very clear when he wants to differentiate between something specific and something broad. So the Board found that microstrips were not required. Dr. Bauer, who is Bell's expert, admitted that in an IC package substrate, microstrips and other tuned impedance lines were not necessary because they're very small and the speeds were less than 4 gigahertz, the ones that Dr. Bauer was familiar with. And so microstrips in particular, that particular type of line, was not required. Now, my friend talks about microstrips. He's making a point on microstrips because he's saying, you know, Dr. Bauer says that they're not in an IC package substrate. But Chin is not limiting his disclosure to that particular problem, microstrips on a PCB. He says that the problem, and again, that's in that background of the invention section, is the large pads versus the smaller interconnecting traces, or it's the word the phrase that Chin uses, that causes an impedance mismatch, which he's trying to address. Okay, and then Bell argues that the Board erred by ignoring the purpose of Chin. Again, the purpose was misstated. This argument was forfeited as well, and the stated purpose of Chin does not limit that disclosure. Okay.
Go back to what you were saying. What did you say is the purpose? Chin disclosed the purpose of the microstrips. Is it to address impedance or to cause it? Does it cause the impedance?
Chen,
does it address it?
So Chen is Chen observed a problem where you have this impedance mismatch when you have a large pad and a thin interconnecting trace. And so Chen observed this and said, okay, let's solve this problem. Along the way, Chen observes that, hey, in the prior art, people would cut out this metal beneath to reduce the parasitic capacitance. And then Chen discloses this additional fine-tuning, that's the word that Bell uses in its brief, this fine-tuning to add just a little bit back in to really match the impedance of the line. But Chen discloses both the problem being solved, or that he's observed, is an impedance mismatch between the large pad and a thin interconnecting trace. And then he's trying to solve that with this capacitance reduction, and then Chen offers a fine-tuning option as well. Okay, my friend brought up the issue of capacitance, whether or not there was a disclosure of the reduction of capacitance. The board found, first of all, the board properly construed the phrase cutouts for reducing parasitic capacitance between the pad layer and the second layer. My friend has used a couple of different, in the briefing and today, has used a couple of different types of capacitance. He talks about parasitic capacitance, that's in the claim, and then he talks about capacitance, overall capacitance. And the claims speak nothing about overall capacitance. It's just talking about parasitic capacitance between that pad and the layers below it. The board relied on substantial evidence to determine that Chen's cutouts were disclosed to reduce parasitic capacitance and were successful. In particular, Appendix 36 to 37, it cites to Chen's experiment where Chen built a mock-up, I guess, of the his design, ran it, and determined that it not only he not only matched the impedance, but he also reduced the excess capacitance, another phrase for parasitic capacitance, and was able to achieve speeds of 4 to 7 gigahertz, which is way, way faster than what the 340 patent is talking about. So there's substantial evidence that capacitance was reduced, parasitic capacitance. I'm sorry, I need to be precise. Parasitic capacitance was reduced in that example. Okay, my friend also talks about claim 16 and 17 rising and falling with claim 2. The board correctly recognized NXP only cited to a portion of claim 2, and the board correctly recognized that NXP was only referencing claim 2 for its commensurate limitations in claim 2. That's in Appendix 68.
Is that because claim 2 turns on routing placement limitation and claim 16 and 17 don't have that limitation?
That's the reason that claim 2 was found not invalid, whereas 16 and 17 were. Because that part of claim 2, the board disagreed with the petition and did not find the routing layer limitation. Okay. Are there other questions about the appeal part? All right, so let me turn to the cross appeal. So NXP raises 2 points of error. First, the board erred by misapplying the law of obviousness regarding same size limitation. The court's decision in Valiant provides clear guidance. So in that case, the prior art disclosed a pH range of 3 to 7, and the claim required 3 to 4. So the district court found, well, that's not a finite set of options that might have been obvious to try. Mathematically, that's an infinite range. There are infinite number of options in there. This court disagreed and said the mathematical approach is not how this should be considered. What we should consider is, in reality, a person with ordinary skill in the art is going to select from a finite set of options within that. Maybe it's tens of options, maybe it's hundreds of options, but it's going to be a finite set of options rather than some mathematically infinite. And that makes sense because somebody's going to go dial in a particular size, and that's how they're going to test these out. Similar to the defendant in Valiant, NXP explained to the board that there are 3 options for sizing cutouts. There's smaller, so undersized, there's same size, and there's oversized. And this was in Appendix 54, cited the hearing in the briefing, and then this was clear in our petition at Appendix 348 and 6181. Okay, no party suggests that undersized is something that Posita would be interested in because you're not fully eliminating the parasitic capacitance, which is something that Chen was talking about. Okay, so let me skip over the same size for a second and talk about oversized. So in the record, oversized cutouts are primarily used by Chen to address some manufacturing alignment issues with a particular process that he was using. So he oversized the cutouts so that everything would align, and then reintroduced some parasitic capacitance to do some fine-tuning afterward. Okay, so Chen also says in that process that by oversizing them, you might be introducing some impedance mismatch, kind of right there in that void where it's a little bit oversized. You might get a little additional impedance at that point. And so cautious against that, and again, that's part of why the cutouts there help tune that in. Okay, so this leaves... So then we look at that oversized cutout range. That's not, again, it's not an infinite range like the board found. This court says we should look at that as it's a set of finite options within that range. And truly, you're limited. If you look at gray brief at 9, you can see that because these are repeating pads, you can only oversize so much because then you walk into the other pads. Okay, so this leads us to the most obvious third option. The same size. If you pick the same size option, then you completely reduce or completely eliminate the parasitic capacitance, and you don't introduce the problem that Chen was potentially concerned about with that mismatch. So much like in Valiant, the realistic size options are properly treated as limited options, and remand would be appropriate to allow the board to consider under the proper standard. Okay, the second point. The board erred by not allowing briefing under the construction of routing layer. So the board, in its final written decision, construed the term routing layer without any opportunity for the parties to address that construction. The board recognized that the term routing layer was not clear, but it was clear enough that it construed the term to mean a layer including at least one routing trace, or at least a routing trace is the specific language at Appendix 45 and 115. Because this is not a harmless error. Because the parties were not afforded an opportunity to brief under that adopted construction, the board discussed whether NXP had proved that they would swap the routing layer of Chen with the reference layer, like just replace them, swap them, and that's not required under that construction. All we need to show is one routing trace on that second layer.
Counsel, you wanted to save a little time to respond on the cross appeal if it's dealt with. It's up to you.
Thank you. I just one more point or a couple more points, and then I'll reserve my time. Thank you. In this case, the board also found, it found at Appendix 41 and 43 that a posita would likely have needed to add routing traces to that second layer.
Who would?
The posita would. The board determined.
A person of ordinary skill.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Speaking English rather than acronyms.
I apologize. The person of ordinary skill. Would have likely needed to add routing traces. And this was the position we had taken in the petition, that it would have been likely necessary to add a route through that second layer, just with the number of signals going through. This would have meant that first layer of Chen, as modified by what the person of ordinary skill would have needed to do, that layer would have become both a routing layer and a reference layer. And this is consistent with what the 340 patent Figure 3 discloses, which is a mix of routing and reference planes. And in fact, Bell's expert admitted that a layer could be a little bit of both. And so remand is appropriate to address these facts under the board's new construction. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
We'll save it for you. Mr. Silva.
Thank you, Your Honor. The word integrated circuit does not appear anywhere in Chin. And we explained in our brief how those snippets of words that say substrate, that say semiconductor implementation, they're taken out of context by the board. And so when you read the full paragraph surrounding them, what you will find is in every instance, and you didn't hear my friend on the other side say this, they're talking about the printed circuit board and when it interfaces with those components, or they're just talking about printed circuit boards in general. The one example that my colleague on their side gave was the statement, another example is a substrate used inside a BGA package in column 1 of Chin. Reading the sentences preceding that and following that, it's talking about the solder ball that's attached to those. And when that gets added to the printed circuit board, the impedance mismatch gets worse because the impedance change between the microstrip on the surface and the pad gets larger. You get more metal in the way, changing the impedance.
You're talking about the BGA?
I'm talking about the statement on column 1, I think it's around line 55 or 56, where it says, another example is a substrate used inside a BGA package. BGA stands for ball grid array. It's referring to the solder balls that, if you look at figure 5 of the Hall patents, are literally balls of solder that add metal to increase, and that makes the impedance problem worse when you do that. And we've gone through those examples in our brief. Not only does the word integrated circuit appear nowhere in Chin, but the board's only reason to say microstrips were not required in Chin was based on a misapplication of claim construction law to reading the prior art. It's very clear in the case law that prior art is read for what it teaches, not what it claims. And just because claim one of Chin does not mention a microstrip or interconnecting conductor does not mean that every single embodiment relied on by my opponent was a printed circuit board with a microstrip and not an integrated circuit package substrate. Now, on inherency, one thing you did not hear my colleague mention on the other side is that the parasitic capacitance was reduced between the layers. It's not. The only thing in Chin is parasitic capacitance reduced locally at the pad. The layer, as you heard in his cross appeal, is something broader that includes more components, and nobody did that analysis. And because there's no argument for inherency and nobody did the analysis, there's no basis to affirm on the parasitic capacitance reduction between the claimed layers. Now, on the routing place, on claim 16 and 17, you just heard an argument that claim 16 does not require a routing layer. That is not true. They use different terms, but they still require the underlying plane to be a signal layer which routes signals. And in Chin, it is a reference plane. It is a ground or power plane. It does not handle signals. And just because it doesn't use the same exact terminology does not mean these claims do not stand or fall together. Now, turning briefly to the cross appeal, the board correctly held that Chin does not disclose same-size cutouts. Judge Rayner, you asked a question just earlier, does Chin require them to be oversized cutouts? The answer to that question is affirmatively yes. And not only is it my view, but it was my opponent's view in their brief at page 69 of their response brief. And this is because Chin identifies manufacturing limitations that prevented smaller size cutouts. Moreover, there were large variances in fringe capacity that would not be controlled by reducing the size of the cutouts. So what do we have? We have art that doesn't teach it and says it's impossible. The board recognized that for this routing placement limitation, my NXP did not provide any motivation to change that did not provide a motivation in its petition for same size cutouts. And you can look no farther than appendix page 364 to see how anemic their petition's analysis of this claim was. Everything else you heard about smaller, medium, and large, and infinite options or not, that's from the reply brief. The board found that waived, and they did not appeal that waiver decision. Now, turning to obviousness to try, if you reach that issue at all, the Supreme Court requires finite, predictable solutions. There's been no showing of finite solutions. You have an infinite range of size, values, shapes, and locations. They have not specified what that set is, and the board correctly recognized that they would lose under that as well. As for the routing placement layer limitation, the claim construction they complain of came from their mouth. At oral argument, they were asked, is this your position? And my NXP confirmed, yes. It's in the transcript. It's also in their petition and reply. Moreover, it's an express claim limitation in claim 2. It says a routing layer including routing traces. It is not a claim construction, and nothing in this case turns on whether that claim is construed or written as it says to require routing traces. With that, Your Honor, I see I'm at the end of my time. Are there any questions on the cross appeal? Right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Nothing up, Mr. Silver. Thank you. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross appeal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to make a couple of points. Nowhere does Chen say anything is impossible. That is not something Chen says. Chen is talking about engineering a solution to a problem and is talking about the context of that problem. The motivation to combine was in our petition. It's at Appendix 348 and 6181 for the other patent. This was the motivation for the same size limitations. We specifically point out in our petition at 348 and at 6181, same size, less than, greater than. The routing layer, the issue there with the routing layer, in the reply brief, we addressed the fact that there was confusion, there was uncertainty about the terms, and our Bell's expert was unable to determine whether a layer was a routing layer or a reference layer, and so that was the issue we were bringing up in our papers. But the board issued its claim construction for the first time then on appeal. And the issue there is the board then applied a different construction by requiring swapping the two layers as opposed to modifying a layer to add a routing trace. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted.